Chapter 12, Visiting an Old Friend. The carriage pulled up just as Malice was making his way outside of the medical building. A cursory look at the pocket watch showed that he had predicted the length of their engagement properly. Malice often wished he could just imagine such scenarios on his own without outside help. But Bishop and the Word of Illusions had served as a proper surrogate. It had been easy to assume the man's friend would come to visit him, interrupting their conversation. Based off of that, he had told his assistant when to bring the horses around. Pulling the door closed behind him, he sat in the cushioned seat and felt the hold of the shadows that had clung to him drop from around his body. Thankfully, the driver had been able to bring it close enough that he was still within the reach of the Nightwalker's magic. The carriage pushed forward and Malice was surrounded by the cacophony of the wooden wheels, rumbling over the dirt roads, calming him as he thought. Malice had been outside the estate without his hooded son plenty of times before, but he always felt slightly more on edge whenever he found himself alone. Laying a hand on his chest, he felt the necklace of interlocking soul stones that was hidden underneath. So long as he kept the stones within reach, he would never truly be defenseless. He removed the smaller of his pipes from a compartment next to his seat, producing a match and lighting the bowl. It had been loaded previously. "Farron," he smiled contently. He hadn't known for certain that Rackmead was an Inksayer or not. That was one of only two possibilities. But when Rackmead grabbed his arm and asked about the mental images, Malice was taken aback. It certainly skewed the chance towards the affirmative. Malice felt sorrow for the young man. Rackmead had yet to gain the knowledge of how most of those he interacted with experienced reality. That the imagination was a literal thing, and that those surrounded him possessed it, and experienced recreations of what their senses had processed. Beyond that, they could relive moments of their lives, memories, and their mind's eye. So many words and phrases that the man had assumed the definition of. A myriad of ways in which he had compensated that he was not even aware of. Malice felt the sorrow return for a moment as he glimpsed a thought. If he thought like those around him, Rackmead could still see the face of his parents or hear his mother's voice. Malice knew the roadblocks that lay ahead of Rackmead, because he had faced the same revelation decades before. For he was an Inksayer, born without a mind's eye. Of course, there was always the chance that a non-Inksayer could possess the same particulars, but is extremely unlikely. Still, Rackmead was someone who needed to be presented with absolutes, but not percentages or likelihoods, no matter how damning. But it was enough to show Malice which direction he needed to lead the young man in. He looked out the window as the carriage pulled onto the estate. With a wave of his hand to solidify the intention, he set aside the thoughts of Rackmead as he walked towards the house. "Mr. Fornica," Farron said as he held the door open. "Was the meeting a success?" Malice greeted his loyal house hand with a smile as he crossed the threshold. "Just as we assumed, our young protector will be visiting us later this evening." "Very well, sir. I will retrieve the words we discussed and have them waiting for his arrival." Malice nodded and continued on his way, not wanting to bother Farron any longer. More importantly, he did not want to be bothered himself. Thinking of the Silencer's predicament had sent his thoughts to another place. He walked towards the false wall, headed for a very specific part of the basement. Malice had known for years that once his wife passed, he would no longer be graced with the sights of her face, or hear her beautiful voice. It only took sitting with that thought for a moment or two to realize that when she finally did die, it would leave him immobilized and useless. So he set out to rectify it, enlisting the help of Bishop, who used the Word of Illusions in conjunction with the Word of Memories. They created a way for Malice to relive his memories. As he made his way across the great room, Malice was grateful that Theos was asleep. Had the man been awake, he would have thrown all manner of insults against him as he worked. It was in these rare moments where Malice was vulnerable, and his bastard of a father sought to take advantage of them whenever he could. He moved towards the back of the room, to a table that was in the corner, near the door Bishop typically used. Lighting a candle, he took in the table. Laid out on top of its flat surface was a slab of glass, with a word of memories embedded in it. Glass may have been a great weakness of the Lakesies, but it had a way of triggering a response from the words directly. Malice placed his left hand on the glass, and the words started to pulse, the tendrils moving and gathering around his palm. He felt the darkness in his mind open as a sea of memories, flashes of experiences, flooded in. With his right hand, he pulled out the pocket watch and held it to his ear, using the consistent ticking to help guide his concentration. The sea thinned and the memory slowed. He removed it from his ear and stared at the watch, studying the moving gears as he slowly transitioned his focus from the outer world to the inner. Malice looked up from the pocket watch that he held in his hand, closing it and pocketing it once again. Sitar City. So much has changed, he thought as he made his way through the streets. No one gave him a second glance as he passed. Even those who once knew him would no longer recognize him. It would not be that way for long. Soon, everyone would know his name. The Fonikas would be a family few could stand against. When he was done, there would be no place in Minehort that he could walk through unnoticed. As Malice made his way into the local inn, he found solace in the fact that little had changed there. He had been gone 15 years, and most of the kingdom looked as different as he felt. May I help you, sir? The man behind the bar asked as he approached the counter. The house ale, please, Malice said as he laid down some coin on the counter. One day, my word will be payment enough. The man poured him a glass and handed it to him. Malice looked down at the beverage, smiling. He had not drank in the years he had been gone, but part of him had missed it. Taking a sip, he tasted it and cringed. Being away has changed me more than I realized, he thought as he grimaced. Do you have any cherries? Malice asked as he pushed the mug away from himself. Seems we do, the man said as he set down a jar of them. After finishing the snack, he left the inn and made his way down the streets. Pulling a short-stemmed pipe from the folds of his robe, he went to light it, when he remembered that he had no way to do so. Malice had gotten the wood for the two pipes he carried with him from the Silent Forest. The Terracra had showed him how to properly cut the wood. Things had been much easier when they had been there to light the pipe. Removing the stem from his lips, he dropped his hand to the side, holding the pipe there as he stopped beside a house whose lights were still lit. Through the window he could see a little girl who looked sickly, a doctor tending to her. Standing off to the side appeared to be the mother and father. Bishop, he called into the empty street. Are you here? Malice felt movement to his side and when he turned, watched as the shadows receded from his son.
Yes, father. I've been trailing you since your arrival.
I assumed as much, Malice responded with a smile. Raising his arms, he brought his son into his embrace and held him there for a moment. It is good to be back, he said as he dropped his arms and stepped away. Do you know what is wrong with that girl? Bishop stepped towards his father and lifted his hand to the pipe, summoning a small flame in his palm and holding it over the bowl. Malice puffed, lighting it.
She has come down with a life-threatening disease. Her body no longer has enough energy to defend itself. The medics have tried everything they can think of, but nothing has worked.
Do you think magic could save her? Malice asked after taking a long draw from his pipe. The Nightwalker nodded.
Given long enough to feel where her pain is coming from, I'm sure we could find the right word to heal her.
Malice felt a sadness grip him as he saw the look on the father's face, and tried to imagine himself in the same situation. "What do you know of her father?" he asked, not turning away from the window.
"Yantu Kormet. He sits on the council for Shittar City."
"I would have use of a man like that. Have you learned all that I asked?"
"Of course, father. What is your aim?"
"Tomorrow you and I will pay Mr. Cormac a visit. His daughter's death will not come soon."
"Understood. Are you off to see Janine now?"
Malice nodded. "How is Damien doing?" he asked as they started walking together.
"Damien is coming into his own. He has been confused by your absence, but the boy is smart. His wheels turn just as quickly as yours. Quicker, even. He will certainly be happy to meet you."
"I hope he will understand. I have thought of this night ever since I left." Malice felt a warmth enter him as the door opened, revealing the face of his trusted househand, Farron.
"Master, it is good to see you again after so long. You have aged quite nicely."
"As have you," he said with a smile.
"Janine is waiting for you, sir."
Malice nodded and made his way inside. Walking up the wooden staircase stirred something inside of him.
"A marble staircase will be more fitting for our new home." "Janine, my love," he said as he opened the door to the bedroom.
"Thank you for the letters, my sweet. I've been looking forward to this day for quite some time,"
Janine said as he walked up to her. Grabbing her in his arms, he held her there as his lips met hers. "I dreaded every day I was away," Malice said as they broke away for a moment, before falling into each other once again.
"But you have accomplished all that we discussed," Janine said as he laid next to her on the bed.
"And there is still so much for us to achieve together," he said as she removed his shirt.
"When was the last time you bathed?" she asked as she undid his belt.
"Is it that noticeable?" Malice asked as he shifted back.
Janine giggled.
"No, my love, but it has been years."
"Must we only have 5 more years together?" Malice asked as they lay in the tub together, his fingers intertwined with hers.
"We decided this long ago," Janine said as she brought her hand to his head, playing with his hair.
"I know," he said, letting the silence pass between them, the water sloshing as they shifted.
"But must everything go according to plan?"
"My sweet Phoenix," Janine said as she moved so that she now lay on top of him.
"Tell me you are not regretting the decisions we have made."
"It is not that, Janine. I just never imagined it would be this hard. I am father to a stranger, and have missed 15 of the last years I will have with you."
"But we still have 5 left," she said as she pulled herself closer to him.
"Let us enjoy them."
Malice nodded and brought his lips to her forehead, kissing her. He rubbed her shoulder softly as he stared at the wall across the room. She could feel him withdrawing. Janine shifted so that she was now eye to eye with him.
"Look at me, my love."
She waited for him to do so.
"I am going to speak to you now, so that you may come back to this moment. I know you will figure out how to do so someday."
Her confidence soothed him. She had his focus.
"My loving Phoenix, I miss you. I love you. Do not forget these times we've spent together. Take care of our sons for me. Remember our plans."
"I will never forget," Malice said, his words breaking him from the trance. He removed his hand from the table and stood still for a moment, steadying himself with the chair as the memories faded from his mind. As they left, he found they were replaced by the darkness he had grown so accustomed to,
he released the tension and straightened his composure. Seeing Janine was a recharge for him. He had visited her once a day since her passing. The front door opened and Malice looked up from the papers on his desk as he heard Farron's voice.
Welcome home, young Fornica. I hope that Vivian is well.
Damien had visited with the girl almost every day the last week, just as Malice had hoped. He resumed sorting through the pile of parchment, the sound of Damien's footfalls trailing ahead of him as he climbed the stairs. As his son rounded the corner into the study, Malice looked up, smiling.
Why did you warn me about her? Damien asked as he approached.
Malice lifted an eyebrow in response.
About the illusions. Why did you say that about Vivian?
A test. To see if your devotion was blind. If you could see that my words were unfounded. Damien sat. The energy he walked in with seemed distant. You passed. You wouldn't be this far if you would not. Damien lifted, looking at the papers laid out before his father. Some were covered in sprawling notes, while a few were maps of Iota.
Refreshing your memory of the landmass?
Damien asked as he stared at them, puzzled.
Another test.
Malice grabbed his long-stemmed pipe and lit it, inhaling deeply. This operation cannot be managed without detailed knowledge of all that defines Iota. I need to know where your understanding of it lies. Tell me of Rant.
Malice pulled the stem from his mouth and pointed it towards the center of the map.
Damien sat up, his eyes looking. Home of the monks. They study spoken writing from a spiritual angle while trying to gauge the physical effects it has on the world. I spent the first 5 years I was away with the monks, studying the practices and learning their control over emotions. And the next 5, getting over their infectious ideals and behaviors, Damien finished for him. Malice chuckled. Damien seemed taken aback. Here I thought I'd only shared that with you once or twice. You possess a memory that I envy, son. 5 times, he corrected. Their eyes met for a moment, Malice's eyes narrowing before he flashed another smile.
Very well.
Withersteel. He touched the stem to the kingdom in the northwest corner. A kingdom of blacksmiths. Most every word they learn is devoted towards perfecting steel. They have all manner of careers, but smithing is at the heart of their society and their religion. The king must be the best blacksmith among them, tested in a yearly trial. Malice nodded.
Regnamidus,
he asked as he pointed south of Meinhort to a kingdom that bridged the east coast. Ulrich's homeland before he sailed for the Inksayers. It is home of the Nichta. What separates them? The race is void of the Mark Child's blood. No Inksayers have born of them, and none can use spoken writing. Malice considered for a moment as he puffed on his pipe. He was impressed with how Damien was handling himself. He was not surprised by how much Damien knew. His studies with Farron over the years had cemented. But he was assessing how well the boy could vocalize the knowledge he had.
What of our home? Meinhort? He asked as he touched the stem to the upper right-hand corner.
Theos the Great was the king before. Considered the best of the Aegidus dynasty, if not better than those who came before his lineage. At that time, Maxtrot Meinhort formed the Church of Silence and preached the origin of the 13th deity. Not long after its founding, the church gained many extremists as supporters. There were beatings from men and women of the church, terrorist attacks launched against the Inksayers and branded in the kingdom. It all came to a head when Maxtrot and 30 of his silencers, a skeleton of what they are today, infiltrated the castle. They killed the royal family, his wife, 2 heirs, all but Theos himself. Malice's eyebrow lifted. Until a week ago, Damien would have said that Theos had been killed as well. There was only a small number of people who thought the Great King was still alive. even fewer who knew he was trapped in the basement. He wondered if Damien had started questioning what role he had played in the coup. He would know well enough before long. Because the royal bloodline was destroyed, there were no contenders for the throne, and Maxtrot seized it quickly. In the first few years, he ruled horrifically. Many of the council members who opposed him were publicly killed. The others quickly came to terms with their new ruler. The dark days came upon the kingdom, filling people with terror. For centuries, spoken writing had been as natural as breathing, and in a day, it all changed. In many cases, entire families were killed overnight. Others were unfortunate, children losing their mothers, wives widowed to husbands. There were attempts at revolutions in the beginning, citizens retaliating, but the silencers quickly squashed those. The only reason the silencers still exist today is because they did what was necessary in the beginning. Malus smiled. He stood and made his way to the balcony, Damien following after him. He stopped at the railing, puffing from the pipe as they stared out at the view. They stood the same way they had all those years ago, when Damien had surprised him late at night. In another lifetime, Damien, you would have claim to that throne. The Aegidus dynasty would be ours, and we would rule this land. But my father denied us that right. Because of that, we must forge our own legacy. Something to make Mother proud, Damien said, a somber smile on his face as they looked out at the expanse of Burrow's Bronn together. I hope you all enjoyed that chapter. Please check out next episode for Chapter 13, Blind Mind's Eye. And as always, the song I used was Fluidscape by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 License at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.